Hello everybody and welcome to the first English episode of Nyhamrad. I guess it's called Reforge now. And in this very special episode we have Sean Shutter. I hope I'm pronouncing that correct.
Yeah, I mean I say Sutter, but Sutter. I guess it's an Americanized version of Suter, so or something. You know, I'm European descent, but I've been in America forever, so.
Yeah, awesome. You are more known for, I think, Relic Blade, which is a like adventure type tabletop game.
Yeah, that's right. Relic Blade is sort of like if you had two players controlling two separate parties of Dungeons and Dragons adventurers.
Yeah.
And it's like a sword and sorcery hack and slash adventure game and it's very scenario driven. So you're always trying to do whatever encounter or mission and challenged by opponents. It's very, very cool. I've been doing that for, I guess, 6 or 7 years now that it's 2022. I started in 2015 full time making games and Relic Blade is my own creation. I started with a little bit of freelance, but then I realized that I really wanted to be making my own thing. And so through Kickstarter, that's way more possible than in the past. So, I just sculpted the models and wrote the rules and did the illustrations. And it's been going strong ever since.
So it got kickstarted like a mm-hmm. done product.
Yeah, I did my first Kickstarter in 2016. And I've done 5 Kickstarters since then, or altogether, and for various expansions as the game keeps growing. And I add new types of heroes or new campaigns, new settings. And at this point, the game has, I think, 8 core factions.
Wow.
And yeah, and so there's a lot to play with, a lot to explore. And it's sort of like... you know, in Lord of the Rings, there's two sides.
Yeah.
There's the bad guys and the good guys. So in that same way, you can create a adventuring party with any good characters working yeah. together, or any evil characters working together. So you can play faction specific, like to use Lord of the Rings terms. You could just play, wood elves.
Yeah, yeah.
But in the Fellowship, you know, there's one wood elf and there's one mountain dwarf and one wizard and some garden people.
Yeah.
So you know, in Relic Blade, there's all kinds of fantasy tropes, but they're also adjusted just a little bit off what you'd expect based on my imagination. So there aren't orcs, but there are pig men that are a little more like...
Yeah, yeah.
Turtles style mutants, so they're a lot of animal hybrid mutant characters. Yeah, it's all just sort of related to my background in comics and my love for toys and cartoons and Lord of the Rings and Dungeons and Dragons and Warhammer and everything, all filtered into my own art style and world. It's very yeah. fun.
I've looked at Relic Blade. I haven't played it at all, but like I've seen it on the website. When I looked for Sludge, I found Relic Blade, and like, what is this? And it looked really fun, and especially if you like use your 3D printed models and stuff like together with the cards. But maybe it's more rules bound than I think. Yeah. Do you have to use?
It's. You know, I'm happy for people to play any way they want, but I print the cards and I,
yeah.
Or, you know, I produce it all as a like box sets and products, and I produce the miniatures. So I don't have digital, like 3D printable versions of the characters.
Yeah.
But you know, with shipping to Europe has become so difficult. I don't need to tell you or your listeners that. and so I'm looking more at, like, rather than having all the same characters that I have worked hard to produce,
yeah,
but maybe have like a different range that is for digital production so that more people can access it. Because really, like, I make the art because I love it and I want to share it with people. And that's one thing I love about making miniatures is I only imagine the world and tell you some about it. And I only sculpt the figures and characters, but it's not finished until someone paints it and gets it on the table. And then the way their campaigns unfold and what happens to their characters, that's when the art is finally finished. So I always think of it as a collaboration, and I'm always very excited to see the fruit of my art turn into, you know, the finished product, which is the painted models on a table, people enjoying it and playing it with their kids or playing it with their friends.
Yeah.
So it's, I would like to make it more accessible through digital, but also the piracy is an issue. So maybe if I have stuff that is, you know, specifically designed for people to be able to download, then I wouldn't feel as bad about when it gets stolen.
Yeah, I understand that. It's clear that it is a labor of love, and it's like everything you do, it seems really passionate. And yeah, super happy to have you here to listen to you talk about some sludge also.
I'm excited. I'm happy to jump into talking about sludge, because it's more of a traditional war game in a way, but also very you know, it's connected to my the style that I write games in, and the fact that I love skirmish games. So you play with bigger armies than with Relic Blade, where you have 4 to 6 models per side, and you play on a 2x2. Sludge, you use, you know, whole, you know, I hate to call it a whole army, because it depends on what your background is. Like, if you play historical games, then, you know, 200 or 300 models on the table would be a normal game. But if you normally play Saga, then 30 models would be what you play. So it's more like Saga scale. So to a historical war gamer, it's a skirmish game. And to someone who normally plays Mordheim or Frostgrave, then it'd be an army game.
Yeah, it's kind of like, it all depends on your perspective. Kind of like Middle Earth, I think, in the scale, like how many models.
Yeah, I think so. Like, 40, 50 figures per side. And the games last about 45 minutes or an hour, because I really like to have decisive rules and like very tactical oriented. So rather than being more of a strategy game, it's more of a tactics game, in that it's what you do in the moment that will decide who's victorious, rather than like a grand scheme of like of strategy, you know.
Yeah. But before we get into more specific rules, I want to hear a little bit about you.
I'm happy to. All right. So my name is Sean Sutter. Yeah. I am an independent artist. I have my own game studio called Metal King Studio. I do all of the game design and sculpture and art. Sometimes I am fortunate and able to hire other artists, so just for fun, to try and get, you know, new life breathed into the world with different styles and whatever.
With artwork? But
for the most part, I do everything myself. I graduated with my degree in fine art in 2012 or 2013, I think. Yeah, probably 2012. And then I did freelance work in comic books, so you can kind of see my art style is very influenced by my like stylized comic book background.
Yeah, more so in Relic Blade.
And then I realized that, you know, working in creative fields, you are gonna be working hard. Like, you've gotta hustle, you've gotta advocate for yourself, you've gotta have your own revenue streams. Like, people won't just hire you and pay you well. What they want to do is hire you
and not
to do something, and they want to be able to take what you make and then make way more than they paid you out of it. You know, that's just the nature of hiring someone to do something. Like, so kind of reflect, I thought, like, long term, I'll make more money if I am, if I own my own art. And if I'm going to be making art, I want to be making exactly what I love. So even though I love comic books, my if I look around my studio, it's mostly miniatures, like, you know, tons of Warhammer armies, War Machine armies, all kinds of figures. And so looking at myself more critically, I was like, oh, I just love miniatures. The internet is big enough. The world is big enough that I can just be making models and we'll see what happens. So I taught myself how to do sculpture because my degree was in like illustration and painting. So I taught myself 3D. I really loved it. And then I was able to take all of my like passions for creating stuff and blend it into actually just making miniatures. And so I've been doing that professionally for like 6 years.
You do it in all in 3D, like in the computer, not any hand sculpting?
Yeah, I use ZBrush for my sculpture. I used to do art all traditional, like with acrylic paints or watercolors and pencils, but now things have gotten so much more advanced in like how you can draw on the computer. So I've gotten tablets, and now almost all my work is digital now. Drawings, because I can now make it look have that like handmade traditional look with the different techniques and brushes. So I really like that. And then it also works well because everything is, when it's finally produced, things get are digitized anyways. So I would have to scan my drawings, traditional drawings, to put them in book layouts, right? Now that it's all digital, it comes out cleaner and comes out more how I envision it. So I'm do digital now.
But what is your background in miniatures and like war games, and how did you get into this in the first place?
I started with, my earliest exposure was through like Dungeons and Dragons and going to the store where they had like role-playing books.
Yeah.
And I played a lot of Rifts. I played Rifts more than D&D actually. But then going into the store as a little kid, I saw the little, I think the one that really caught my eye was the orcs, space orcs with like checker marks painted on them. And then like the Space Marine tanks that had like little flags.
The Land Raiders or...
Yeah, the one like with the sticker flags, the old like, I don't know what edition, third edition.
Old Predators maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, so like those really caught my eye, and then seeing like War Master figurines and all that stuff, just this dusty old game store, you know, game stores when they're just like dungeons. And so seeing that stuff really like blew my mind, because I love toys, and then seeing like really detailed, really amazing miniatures got my imagination pumping. So that was when I was younger, but then it wasn't until I was like 13 or so that I was able to get enough money together to actually buy a Warhammer box set. And what I first got was the Warhammer 6th edition box set that had orcs and empire, and that blew my mind. Got that going. I played a little bit of 40k, and then but probably the game I got on the table the most was Mordheim. So even though I played Warhammer Fantasy and I played Warhammer 40k and I'd collect armies and paint and play, it was Mordheim that I really was able to like play campaigns and build war bands and enjoy that. So
I am not surprised to hear it.
Yeah.
Like, if I would guess, your fantasy game would be Mordheim, because.
Yeah, exactly. So then later on, I got into War Machine. Really enjoyed that the way the rule set is, second edition War Machine is what I played. And the rules were really, really dynamic and in-depth, and like what models did was very exciting compared to like move, shoot, assault. You know, like you know, Warhammer, bless its heart, it is not as not as like interconnected on the table. So like the board state just didn't speak to me as much. So playing War Machine really opened my eyes to game designs. And then of course later when Joe McCullough released Frostgrave, that was really blew my mind, because I had been playing Dungeons and Dragons and playing War Machine and wanting, and like I had a couple drafts written of my rules. I had like ideas for how I wanted activations to work and like what type of game I would want to play, because none of the games that I'd played were really exactly what I wanted.
Yeah.
And so then reading Joe's book, Frostgrave, it just sort of dawned on me like, oh, there's really nothing stopping you from writing a game.
Yeah.
But, and so that, you know, that helped me get more momentum on actually finishing and creating Relic Blade. And so that when I sat down with my old drafts of different notes I had, I was able to like organize my thoughts and get Relic Blade together and put that out. And, you know, since then, now I'm part of a Blaster magazine, which is where Sludge is published.
Yeah.
And that's a partnership or what's like an artist collective. A
collaboration project, maybe.
Anthology, yeah. Where I'm working with Joe McCullough and Ash Barker.
That is Mini Wargaming.
Yeah, he does
Guerrilla Wargaming.
Guerrilla Miniature Games on YouTube. Yeah. Joe McCullough obviously wrote Frostgrave and a bunch of other games, including Oathmark and Silver Bayonet and
He wrote Star Silver Trek, Bayonet, you know? As well.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah. He's very prolific. He's always writing. And then Mike Hutchinson is part of the collaboration. He wrote Gaslands. And Joey McGuire wrote This Is Not a Test and Reality's Edge. And then there's myself. I wrote Relic Blade. And so we're all working together and making, I didn't miss anyone, right? Joe, Joey, Ash, Mike.
That's me. Not small names, your name.
No, yeah, here. So it's very cool. And then, so working with those guys, and they've got all these games under their belts, and I'd wanted to write a larger battle game, because Relic Blade is very focused on recreating, like, the Dungeons and Dragons, like, dangerous encounter where you've got very, you know, tactical movement, tactical choices, and you aren't limited to like move and shoot, but rather you've got a lot of different types of interactions the characters can do to make choices about how they're gonna behave and how they're gonna act in the combat in these tactical games. So, those games are smaller skirmishes between heroes, and so I really wanted to make a battle game. And so working with those guys, I felt like, oh, well, again, there's nothing stopping me, and we're publishing. Right now, it's two volumes a year of Blaster. And so I was like, well, whatever. I have the game in my imagination, so I'm going to start making Sludge. And, you know, inspired by how Saga, you know, they've got Saga miniatures and stuff. They really allow people to play kind of a historical fantasy. Where, you know, Vikings are sort of historical, but also they have like special powers related to Norse mythology, or you know, Crusaders have like special powers. And so in that way, I wanted to push it even farther into the realm of like, they aren't even based on Vikings. We're just full on going to use historical miniatures and make a historical fantasy setting. So drawing on inspiration from heavy metal music, anime like Hayao Miyazaki's Castle in the Sky.
A little bit Nausicaa. Of steampunk.
Like steampunk, but like pre-steam, like black powder punk, powder punk, I guess. Historical fantasy, like, I just wanted like guns and knights.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
yeah. I want knights to be really powerful with like magic weapons, and I want peasants to be armed with guns and be running around. So
who does?
So yeah, diving into that, I started creating this world where there's magic, and people get their magic by mining the core wood out of the world tree.
Yggdrasil.
And the world tree is like, rather than a tree that grows out of the earth, the world tree is more like the nervous system of the planet.
Okay.
And so as they mine and dig deep and cut out parts of the world tree to do like kind of an industrial revolution, it ended up destroying the planet, and the planet broke apart. And now, the core of the world being this like massive supernatural tree, various tracts of land and plains and continents are now suspended, broken apart in the roots and tangles of the branchways of the world tree. So in that way, I created a setting that's like Castle in the Sky, in that there are nations floating up in the sky and flying ships that are powered by magic.
Yeah.
But also, it's like a metaphor for how, you know, fossil fuels could really mess up the planet, you know? And in that way, magic, abusing and like continuing to use magic in that way, also broke apart the world. And so the surviving nations are after this like world shattering apocalypse, and they're very grim. You know, the oceans are now suspended in storms, basically. So it's always foggy, always rainy, always dark. So
are the oceans in between the plains then? Like
the oceans, I think that the oceans, there may be portions of the world that have larger bodies of water.
Yeah.
But for the most part, it's like floating islands that have massive storms that move through.
All right.
And so they get their like water distributed by storms, which also creates a lot of mud and a lot of decay, and things slosh away. But, you know, there are people, there are nations, there are, you know, people surviving for hundreds of years in these like nation states throughout. And so it's sort of, yeah, like Black Powder era technologically.
Yeah, yeah.
With sorcery and enchanters. So there are, the knights have heavy armor that's enchanted and heavy weapons that are enchanted. And so the noble classes of knights are extremely powerful.
Yeah.
And then against that, there's, you know, more typical troops like line infantry armed with muskets and, you know, dragoons or heavy cavalry units.
Yeah.
Then there's also, you can, for some nations that don't have access to black powder, then they're able to use the magical enchantments to make more traditional weapons more powerful, like halberds or pole arms and spears and swords and things like that. So in a way, it's like, it gives me an opportunity to balance the playing field and let people create armies that they, that really appeal to them, to more medieval or more modern. And the idea is that people can create their own armies. And then as the game's developed, I also have been starting to release sculpts and figures. So I just released the first full army that I sculpted for Sludge.
Yeah, I saw it. It was amazingly painted as well.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, it's very cool. And I'm able to explore, you know, it's obvious that it's inspired by human cultures and history, but also very fantasy. So it's fun for me to be able to take a lot of influences and blend them into a unique but recognizable vision.
Yeah, you can do whatever you want.
Exactly.
Because the version we got right now is from the Blaster number 2, which is kind of, I guess, your first draft at this game. And it's kind of, these are the rules. do whatever models you want.
Yeah, it's like, Blaster Volume 3 has the core rules and the core unit type. So everyone has access to the same types of units, whether they're line infantry or skirmishers or knights and things. And then in the next volume, that should be like, I think we finally finished all of the design like yesterday
Okay,
and everything.
awesome.
So I expect it to come out in the next couple of weeks. We just have to get Drive Through RPG to print a copy and make sure that, there aren't errors in the way it exported, and then it'll be good. But yeah, in the next volume, that's when I'm gonna release the factions, where there's gonna be four different nations, and things get a little more specific in those factions.
Awesome to hear. I've kept a lid on it, when I tried the beta rules as they were then, with the different factions, it's been super super fun, and it really fledged out the game for me and my group.
Yeah, it's fun. It comes to life in an interesting way, because there's something about universal troop types where you're like, okay, yeah, it's a war game, this is cool, and like I can play it. But when there are factions, that there's something about the play style that comes through with the special units, like particularly the cult factions, with the way they deal with stress, and they've got like these demonic giants, and or all the different play styles that are introduced. It comes to life in the way you would want for a miniature game, where you can, where it's a different experience to play a different army.
Yeah, but also the theme around it, you get more lore. Like listening to you talk about the lore now has been like listening to the Silmarillion audiobook. I just want to hear more about it. It really helps to make a cool knight themed army, or make a yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, there's always this balance. There's a lot going on inside my head that I can't get it all out at once. And so probably one of the biggest lessons I've learned as an independent creator is to just try to relax a little bit and do things one step at a time. And so I would love to have written Sludge, have a big hardcover book, a full range of miniatures in terrain, everything out when I first launch it. But as one person, it makes sense. I can write the core rules, release it in Blaster. I can get feedback. I can do expansions, like, we've got faction rules now, but obviously it'd be cool to have campaign rules. It'd be cool to have skirmish rules, all of the things you'd find in a big rule book. I just have to do one step at a time. And like,
Yeah, super
yeah, so
ambitious.
even releasing this one army, it's amazing. I sculpted 42 unique miniatures
Yeah, that's
and
not
put
a
them into
small
production.
feat.
Yeah, but then one army isn't a war game. So I need, I'm only at halfway to the minimum of two armies to fight each other. Although Keth is in a state of civil war, so you definitely can build multiple types of armies out of it, including all the diff four different types of factions that are released in this next set. You could use the go on.
The miniatures that you made now, what kind of scale are they in? Because people can use whatever models they want so far,
Yeah.
but what scale are the ones you have done?
They're 28 millimeter, and they're more close to contemporary Perry miniatures. So they're smaller, of course, than Warhammer. And their weapons and heads and hands are smaller compared to old Warhammer models, and they're much smaller than the new like 32 and 40 millimeter figures that they make these days. But but they fit really nicely with against historical figures like from like Perry or War Games Atlantic or you know, the Oathmark miniatures.
But my next question here will be when I first found out about Sludge and like wanted to try it, and I found it really hard to get Warhammer players to try anything other than Warhammer.
The story of my life.
Yeah, it's super hard. But when I looked at the historical range of miniatures, I was like, holy shit, like how many different companies are there that makes these kind of figures?
So, yeah, so many. And like some really wonderful kits. Like if you love the like old fashioned plastic kits that like you can kit bash very well. Fireforge Games makes amazing plastics that you can, and a lot of them are really meticulously designed so that they go across multiple kits. Same with the like Oathmark figures. I think, is it North Star that produces them? I forget what company actually makes them, but like the Frostgrave kits, the Stargrave kits, you know, all of those are really that like early 2000s Warhammer golden age of being able to like glue arms on guys.
So,
And that, awesome. You know, of course, my figures, I made one part so that they cast in one piece. So because I, you know, converting models is a very, very amazing. I've seen some beautiful, beautiful things. And assembling models is an important part of the hobby for some people. But that's never been my favorite part. I really prefer painting and playing to gluing them together.
Me too.
So especially with this, where there's going to be a lot of figures, I tried to make them all one piece so that you can get to the part that I really like, where you can glue them to the base and then start playing.
And if you want to convert, like cut them up, it's not harder than that. How has the tabletop community like reacted to Sludge? What's the outreach?
Because the blaster format is sort of new for people. You know, anthologies aren't a new thing. You know, H.P. Lovecraft and Robert E. Howard were publishing their books in anthologies before they made any collected volumes. Or, you know, horror movies, you can get like really unique, wacky, scary movies by just doing a bunch of shorts all as one thing. There's so many great examples of anthologies, but in the war games realm, there are rule sets, and then there are magazines that will have like articles. But the games anthology, I think people have had a little bit for people to like wrap their mind around it, because they don't want to, you know, they know what to expect from a magazine and they know what to expect from a rule book. So an anthology is a little bit new for some people. So the adoption has been a little bit confusing for some folks. But overall, I think the reaction has been really good. And it's a neat way for us to share, introduce our communities to each other. You know, like people who really love Gaslands will very much enjoy the settings for This Is Not a Test or Last Days Zombie Apocalypse, you know?
For sure.
But it isn't necessarily like something they were exposed to, because we're all creating things on such an independent scale that, you can get stuff. Osprey is big compared to what I'm doing. But in the grand scheme of things, you know, those could still be easily considered independent games. So it's, the adoption has been really exciting as people are getting it on the table and playing and starting to learn about like what makes the rule set unique. Because Sludge has a very specific and dynamic flavor to it,
Yeah, for sure. I looked at
where psychology is dealt with a gore mechanic. So as units fight and take wounds, they drop gore on the battlefield, and then that physical area becomes like a stressful area for any humans to be around.
Yeah, it's the
And
worst.
as they overcome their disorder, you can remove gore from the battlefield, and it doesn't really represent actually people picking up the severed limbs. And gore doesn't even necessarily represent exactly guys bleeding on the ground, but it does represent like all of the chaotic energy and danger and heightened stress of the battlefield being like represented in a visual way. And then also it makes it very crazy because it's such a spectacle of a game where you've got lines of infantry moving across the battlefield, flanking each other, opening fire, big explosions, all kinds of craziness. And then late game, you'll have units that have been victorious and are sled, advancing, but there will still be piles of scattered gore and ruin across the battlefield. So in a way, like late game in Warhammer somehow looked tidier than the outside of the game, whereas when you're playing Sludge, it looks like there was a terrible battle.
Like if you compare Warhammer game of Age of Sigmar, in the end, like you will have a small hero like at the corner of the table to survive, but by the end of the Sludge, you have like 45, 25 millimeter bases with the gore on them, like it looks like a massacre.
It's very exciting. Like it really it's fun, a spectacle, I think.
Yeah,
Like
for sure.
I was playing it with Malev. Malev does Shinobi, he paints miniatures and he raps, and hopefully everyone that's listening to this podcast will go and immediately listen to his music, Malev.
Yeah, we can
And
link it.
yeah, we'll do that. And anyways, he was over and we were playing it, and he had been part of the development of Sludge. Like we hang out and talk about game ideas all the time, and he's like one of my main creative collaborators. And then once, so he knew about what the game was like, but then it was that moment about halfway through his first game where he was like, man, this game is crazy to look at. Like this is a spectacle. It's a whole like story unfolding, because you remember and see where the big battles, where the big decisive moments were, because it's like there's a big cluster of gore over on the right, and you remember that's where you sent your knights, and then they got flanked, and then so there's an interesting, like, the scars of the battle are written into the table.
Yeah, I can recommend going into the Guerrilla YouTube channel and look at Ash playing it, because like I had to look at it a few times before figuring out what's going on. And I only seen him read books before for hours and hours,
Oh,
but
yeah, that's funny. Yeah, man who reads books.
has been a lifesaver in the Warhammer community. But yeah, watching him play Sludge was really good to get your hype up.
So that's exciting. So I'm very happy with the Sludge rules, and I see so many opportunities for it to go from being a game that's very rich to be played with historical figures in more of a like serious historical setting, that's still like that horror genre with the gore and the craziness. But then also being able to push more into a full fantasy like Lord of the Rings battle, where you've got orcs and humans and a very grim fantasy, and then more in the like Sludge universe where you've got the world tree and the unique factions that are brewing in my mind. So I see like a whole spectrum of potential rules and factions that I could write at as we the game. So I'm very, very happy with it. I really enjoy it. I recently got on Alex's Patreon, Alex Huntley of Warp Miniatures has a Patreon where he'll make fantasy figures and just release the STLs, just whatever he wants. But his style is very unique and like cartoony and fun. And so I grabbed a bunch of his 3D printable models and made a sludge army that's all dwarves, dark dwarves, sort of influenced by Chaos Dwarves, but they aren't Chaos Dwarves.
Yeah, I know which one you mean.
People can check them out. But yeah, I made a sludge army out of them. You know, I've made sludge armies with high elves. I've made sludge armies with Napoleonic French or Napoleonic Russians. It's a fun way to be able to make these.
Yeah, it's the most creative tabletop game I've played yet.
Oh, that's cool. That's great to hear.
And everyone I talk with has been like super excited just to make an army.
It can be a challenge because getting people on board to play new games is always hard.
Yeah.
But getting people on board to play a game where there isn't like a clear example of what to do can be hard. But then as you see what other people are doing, you can start to really find exactly what you're excited about. Because you could just as easily make a Viking army or a samurai army or even some kind of, you know, a kobold army, whatever. Fishman army.
To get painters to like get excited to make an army, that's not super hard. You can... like everyone the thing that they want to do, like now they have the perfect game to like go wacky with it.
Definitely. So that's been really fun.
But it feels like you answered my upcoming question, which was what game design are you particularly happy with? I think it is the gore technique.
Yeah, I think it's the gore and also the way models activate and the way they interact with stress. I think it's very neat. I think I can, maybe you talk to me about this, but there's a little bit of a disconnect in the way the math works.
Because
the target number, you kind of like add and subtract, and that's not tidy. I realized that if I have people take the power of the weapon and just subtract that from the defense of the opponent, it's the same math. And then it makes it much easier to know what your target number is. So like for damage. And then the target number for hitting guys, you know, you've got your bonuses and stuff. So I think in the final, like, the final trying to make sure it's as approachable as possible is going to have more, I think, to do with how I explain what's happening than like changing the method. So yeah, there's like, I love it so much and I think it works really well, but I also want to make sure that people aren't like fumbling through trying to do math while they're playing. Because I want people to feel like they're making quick tactical decisions.
So in this, will it be in the next, version of Blaster or even further future rules?
Yeah, I think that it's just as simple as writing a paragraph about how people can think about it or should think about
an example.
I didn't write that in the next one. I want to kind of play test because I have a couple of other like little tidying things that I'd be interested in exploring, but as it stands, I'm really, really pleased with the rules. And the way you're able to have these very decisive and dramatic battles where like every activation is quick to resolve, but very decisive and very impactful to the game.
Yeah, it's unlike any other game in that way, like in which order you want to do things. Like if I activate this one and use his ability to buff my knights, so on my next activation, my knights can go and do a super duper thing. But if I buff hit them, I can get flanked and my knights are fucked. But if I go with my knights now, they're too far away to be buffed later. Like everything is, you have to think about what you're doing really, really hard compared to like Warhammer, which you can do everything in your hero phase and then everything in your movement phase, and you know.
Yeah, you've got to make those quick choices of about like, yeah, when is it, when's the right time to strike, and like when you keep the initiative in your favor if you take the time to reposition or cast your spells or whatever. So it's dynamic in that way. And I want to put pressure on people as they're making choices that the choices shouldn't take, your turn doesn't last very long. You're able to make the choice quick, but it's an important choice, you know? So there are definitely moments where I've played games where I'm like really have to look at it and figure out like what action, what order I can give to my troops to really get out of a bad situation. And that can last a while as I'm trying to humming and hawing about, oh, I need to do this. But in general, it's very quick back and forth as the game it has alternating activations, like chess, where you move one and your opponent moves a piece.
Like before we
But
go
you have to
on.
move. You move, e each unit only activates once. So you have to be really mindful about how you're gonna do it. So it's fun, it's very exciting. I love it.
Yeah, I love it
So
too.
I think I'm most proud of the overall package of the size of the armies is very appealing to me. The gameplay is very appealing to me. The style that's developing with the figures I'm releasing, I'm very happy with. Yeah, so it's a really neat project that I've been putting a ton of my creative energy into, unfortunately to the detriment of Relic Blade development. But I can only do so much as one little.
But your future plans for Sludge, and like if you see it in the upcoming year, what are we to expect?
All right. I expect my next big push. Well, there's Blaster Volume 4, which has the Sludge Nations supplement in it. And that's a really major development for the world of Sludge. Like you've seen previews and the draft of like the lore and all of that. And also the units. So there's so much added there. That's a really big development. And then the next phase, I think, is also going to be sculpting a lot of miniatures. I expect to be spending a lot of time just like making very, very fun figurines. Which, for the my EU audience is a little less exciting because it's so hard to get those figures shipped overseas. But,
Can you
you know.
somehow hire anyone in Europe to produce them as well?
I have a friend in the United Kingdom that is going to hold some inventory, but I'll need to find someone in the EU that can manage it. I ha am working with Blacksite Studio to produce the sludge kits. That way, because with Relic Blade, like each time I get an order, I hand pack it in my garage and send it to people. And so managing multiple ranges of miniatures would be too much for me, I think. So I'm partnering with them.
Yeah, it sounds really
Now that
smart.
also means that like there are things that I don't have control over, you know. So as far as how we do EU distribution, that's on Blacksite to figure out. So hopefully I know it's something that's present in their minds because, anytime we make something, it's one of the first things we think of is how we're going to actually get it to people. But yeah, and then future development, I also, like I was saying, hinting at before, the a high fantasy setting also really appeals to me, where you can, I love elves and dwarves and orcs and stuff, so some kind of good rule set or expansion or mod I would love to produce so that people can get on the table. Because in a lot of ways, the the Armies of Sludge are based on real traditional, you know, yeah. Napoleonic force organization, you know, with dragoons or line infantry and Jaegers and things like that.
Yeah.
But it's also has a Warhammer fantasy empire kind of feel to it.
Yeah.
So if the core units are very much like Warhammer fantasy empire, like how fun would it be to also just write profiles for, you know, high elves and dwarves and orcs? Like, it's not that big of a stretch.
No.
To get that thing, you know? And then the big thing is, like, the rules for monsters, creating customization. I've got, like, you know, documents all full of notes and imaginations. And the more I see, the more I get excited about it.
You already introduced a kind of fantasy element with the new, some of the new factions.
Yeah.
May I speak about it, or?
Yeah, definitely. Because this episode will come out only, you know, I don't know exactly how quick it'll release, but people who are listening will only be days away from.
Yeah. But one of the factions has a giant, like enslaved yes. giant,
uh-huh.
which is also rules wise a crazy mountain of a.
Yeah, very interesting, because it's like it's a really strong single guy.
Yeah,
which has its costs and benefits, because like a unit of knights may cost similar points wise, but they die different, they get stressed differently, they fight differently.
Yeah,
and so then a giant is like a really interesting creature to be causing havoc on the battlefield and eating people.
You're also introducing abilities for knights, so they get kind of like a vampire, like blood knights, like vampire
yes.
knights.
Yes, yeah, like vampires, yeah.
So we already got vampires, and we got giants.
Yeah, that's true. And then there's, you know, there's also tanks and airships and rockets and mortars and all kinds of like...
I want to talk about the vehicles, because the vehicles is it feels like it's a hard thing to nail down in a miniatures game. Like, you know, Warhammer has done it differently time and time again. Like, can a tank be hurt by a sword? Yes or no? And like, what's your take on it? How do you want a vehicle to work?
Well, I don't want rules bloat. You know, I want to be able to explain the core mechanics to you and then have you be able to play.
Yeah.
So I didn't want to jump into too much of a what's the word for it? Simulation of an actual vehicle. So the vehicles in Sludge now, they work pretty much like a single large figure moving around. So yeah, in my imagination of the Sludge universe, an enchanted sword can cut open the side of the tank.
Yeah,
you know,
so easily.
That's sort of where I'm going. So that's sort of where I'm at with it in my lore justification, because you know, a musket, actual lead musket ball, is not going to pierce a steel tank. But what about an enchanted musket ball? And who says it's lead? What if it? You know,
what's
like
magic?
What kind of they're on it, and like, anyways, so that's kind of a key question of technology in the Sludge universe, is like, you don't know how much of it is.
How is the tank driven? What fuel, or is it magic?
Yeah, it's arcane, so it is, but it's also advanced with or mixed with machine technology.
Yeah.
So it's in lore, it's crewed by both an enchanter and a machinist.
Yeah, all right.
So,
like a Daemon
Smith. It requires a very specialized crew to be able to operate these like
I love how you don't want to say that it's driven by steam. Like, no way. it can be arcane instead.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know why. Why would I there whether it's Steam or not. I just
hate Steam.
It may be Steam, but it burns harder and hotter and more dangerous than what coal would produce.
Yeah, magic steam.
So, yeah, magic steam. Like, yeah, it's coal, but it's the coal is made out of a magic material of the world tree rather than compressed carbon.
The coal is made of magic, dead arcanist bone.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. We have a few more listener questions. If we can move forward, or did we miss anything?
Yeah, I'm happy. Mm-hmm.
All right. So when you're creating a physical miniature, which you are, and you're not only selling it as an STL, how hard is it to like go from your mind to a physical product?
I think, all right, so there's multiple parts. I tend to be a little long-winded when I talk about stuff, so bear with me. But for me, when I was doing 2D art, like illustration or drawing, in my imagination, I can visualize what I'm trying to draw, and then I'm trying to translate it to a 2D form. And because like a face is three-dimensional, and then how you draw a nose, for example, if you've ever tried to draw a nose, it will look weird if you don't get the lines just in the right area. And
yeah,
it's a pain. So when I was learning 3D, it was actually very, very freeing and very comfortable because you don't have to translate from one visual language to another, because my imagination is 3D.
Yeah, yeah.
So when I make the thing in ZBrush, I'm just transcribing what I'm imagining rather than translating to another language of 2D. So it's very natural for me to create 3D things. It's very fun and free, and it, as I've become more and more comfortable with the medium of working with ZBrush, I've been able to sculpt relatively quickly. I tend to be fast and loose with my artwork. So love it or hate it, that's my style. Not overly like, refined, not overly rendered, but very expressive.
Very atmospheric.
So that's my way. When I'm sculpting, though, I always have to keep in mind the production, because I'm limited. If I'm going to make a mold and actually produce the kit, it has to be a two-part mold. And that means that any part that isn't aligned with that two-part mold needs to be a separate piece. And then if you're dealing with these tiny figures that have too many pieces, that can be very frustrating. Like for those of us, we love Corvus Belli and Infinity. They make beautiful miniatures. Sometimes the parts are too small.
Yeah.
I've heard that same criticism of like Marvel Crisis Protocol, where, you know, like things can be separate. And Games Workshop, of course, has had a long story.
Malifaux. History
of funny things like, a separate cigar that you have to glue onto the guy's face or whatever.
Yeah.
So I'm always trying to make sure part of my like loose and stylized sculpting style, I also am trying to make sure that you aren't stuck with anything too weird or out of place or having to glue things in. So as I've developed my production skills, I'm trying to produce things in fewer and fewer parts.
So
that's
paint.
A big part of it, making sure that things can be cast, backfilling, making sure the designs come out right, making sure mold lines don't go right across someone's face. You know, I've made those mistakes. And I remember early on feeling like, oh, I've produced, you know, a dozen miniatures. Now I know how to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
But man, it's amazing. Every time I create a new model, there's always something that I'm like, wow, That's a lesson learned. Moving on, I'm going to make sure I do this differently or make sure those volumes are proper. So it's very involved on the technical side, but it's also something I enjoy a lot. So I'm not, yeah, I love to do it. And it's also very interesting, the question related to producing for a physical kit versus a digital kit, because in a lot of ways, producing a digital kit is worlds easier because you never have to worry about the machining or
Yeah,
mold.
I can
You
imagine.
just have to worry about making sure people will like it. And so,
Like
and
how they
then,
print it is their problem.
yeah. And then, of course, my earliest background in 3D has always been oriented towards making miniatures. And so I'm always thinking about like how easy will this be to paint? How pleasant will it be to paint? Will a wash work very well on this detail? Like,
Glad
because you want
to
a
hear
detail
it.
that you can just add like a wash or a glaze and bring out the detail of the figure. Whereas sometimes you can get a digital model that I think it's clear that the person who made it comes from more of a video game background, where you got, you can do a realistic thinness to a sword, and then when it 3D prints, it's like paper thin, and that's to scale, and it looks realistic in the 3D render, but it's not so great for painting and not so great for durability.
But
So yeah, there's a lot that goes into it. It's
do you troubleshoot yourself, like 3D print them before, or do the factory send to you, or?
When I first started, 3D printers were a lot less accessible, and so I would hire someone to 3D print a low resolution, like a cheaper prototype for me, so I could check the scale. The scale is really important to me. I don't want I want my worlds to be cohesive. And then, which Sludge put me in an interesting spot, because I didn't choose my scale as much as thinking about like what will blend in with the largest world of miniatures out there. So that's why it's more of a like a historical true 28 compared to the like Warhammer Fantasy or even Age of Sigmar scales. And then I check the scale, I check the details, I try and I notice whether things are working or not working. And then I would order a high resolution 3D print to be like on an industrial printer to like really get a super, super crisp prototype, and then send that to a mold maker. These days, I have a decent 4K frozen mini 4K
I've got the same one.
printer, and I'm able to get prototypes made pretty quick and nice enough to paint. Like, it used to be that you wouldn't ever want to paint a 3D print, or I wouldn't. The quality was such that it wasn't worth my time to paint it. But now the technology's catching up, where like I can print miniatures now, and then get the prototypes made on like a nicer machine, or with like really, really carefully made settings to get like the best detail out of it. So
What's your
I don't print my own like production prototypes, but I
take
print my own.
on the production type compared to your own printed? Like, do you notice a huge difference, or?
Yeah, I do, but I'm also the person who sculpted it. So if I saw a miniature from a friend like Alex Huntley, and I print one of his models, I will just be delighted by what I get. Whereas he might look at it and be like, "Oh man, oh, I added that detail there and it's not crisp enough," or "I added that." So for me, I know what the standard or the goal is, but for a consumer, like, I'm happy as can be to print other people's stuff. But when I print my own, I'm usually a little bit disappointed, like, "Oh man, If only it was crisper. But then, you know, I can get the high, really high resolution prints. And then once the mold is made, the master mold is made, you lose a little bit of detail. And then the production mold is made and you lose a little bit of detail. And then the production casts come out. And then what you end up getting is closer to what, you know, I'll always be a little disappointed with production casts, but that's just because I know what I meant.
Yeah.
But then I separate myself by a month or two from since I sculpted it, and I'll be like, oh yes, it's wonderful. I love everything about it. It's very funny. As an artist, you're always like driving, but that last, I don't know, 2-4% of detail is only in the eye of the artist.
Yeah, for sure. We have the hardest question for you at the end here.
Oh shoot! Okay.
It's what is the easiest thing about running a tabletop gaming company?
And the easiest thing?
Yeah, and the hardest.
All right, I'd say the easiest thing or the most fun thing is that I get to pursue whatever things I imagine and create whatever I want, because I and it's stuff that I really, really like. So whatever I'm excited about, whether it's binging on this like dark fantasy black powder setting or a brighter, more adventurous fantasy setting, or even side projects, like I just released a kit that was inspired by Merkborg RPG. So I get to just be an artist and be creative and free. And then I'd say the hardest part is the other side of that coin, that like I'll want to be making art, but it's also a job, so I have to try to you know, do marketing or manage my inventory or ship orders. Like my last Kickstarter did really well, which was amazing and wonderful, and I was able to get enough funds to do a lot of creative projects. But it took me almost 6 months of just sitting in my garage packing to ship all of the orders.
Yeah,
you know?
Price of success. So, like, yeah.
You know, my best effort, I can only keep up so much, because it's not only the 1,000 pre-orders that I had to do. It was also each miniature needed to be sorted into baggies and checked for quality control and, you know, packed. And each card needed to be sorted, and each box needed to be folded. And so all of the stuff leading up, before I even shipped the first order of the Kickstarter, it was, you know, countless steps of writing the book, designing the book, getting previews of the book, printing the book, getting the book, folding it, getting it into the boxes with the cards, with the tokens, with the figures, with the bases.
You do it all yourself.
I do it all. It's really
It's not possible to hire anyone to help with something.
It is possible, but it was right during COVID.
Yeah.
So I couldn't even invite friends over to help.
No, I get it.
So that was tough. Now, you know, I have one of my friend's daughters. I hired her to. She's like 15. I hired her to do sort cards, so I don't have to sort the cards anymore. She knows all of the factions and the cards, and she can go through it and do it all. And so that's been really awesome, because that freed me from a big task.
I was afraid that you were going to say customer support.
Customer support. I mean, I do it because I want to share it with people. So customer service is not a burden for me. I love to interact with people. Sometimes I am too slow on emails. I'm sure you've tried to get a hold of me and noticed that I'm a little bit hard to get a hold of sometimes. But no, I love it. I love to interact with my audience.
And, I know. Sometimes...
And I'm so grateful when people support my art and buy my games, buy Relic Blade or buy Sledge. It's really a big deal. I mean, I might I might think I'm not really competing with Games Workshop, but technically I am, because you could buy the latest, hottest Eldar, or you could buy some weird indie dwarf wizard produced by a guy in his garage out here in California. You know, so it's a tough choice. And Games Workshop is sending you emails and releasing videos about all their new releases. And I'm the best I can do is post on Instagram every couple days or every couple weeks that I'm still alive. So it's a big deal. And then, you know, in the grand scheme of things, Games Workshop is competing with every big video game company, and every dollar that people, hobbyists, have to put towards gaming, they also can put towards beer and put towards movies towards. So, when people choose to support my art, I really regard them as part of the community that makes these games possible. So it's really exciting for me to interact and be part of.
Yeah, if you want to be a part of the community in Sludge and check it out, like there is the Metal King Discord, and there is the Sludge Facebook group, which has been like really active. I was shocked to see how many different people make different armies.
Mm-hmm. And there's also the Relic Blade Facebook group too. So, and that's also a really cool community. I think people respond to the fact that I'm obviously doing it because I love it, and I obviously am really excited. I'm really stoked that people are into it. So it ends up being a very fun, supportive community where we, you know, so it's a cool way to interact with the hobby and also with the Blaster project. I'm also able to get interconnected with the other smaller games and groups and trying to build like a real network of indie game designers, and because I think it's a portion of the hobby that when your eyes are open to it, the whole miniature hobby really comes alive. Because Games Workshop is amazing. I love their figures. I love what they're doing. Their worlds are very cool. And they also produce enough that you could get a new release every week.
Yeah.
And your whole hobby could easily be just Warhammer 40,000.
Yeah.
But there's so much out there that once you're opened to it, it's very, very fun to dig into all these like different types of game experiences that exist. And, you know, getting a big group together and playing Gaslands is a very different experience than setting up your Space Marines again.
Yeah, I agree. We talked about it in an earlier episode, like in the Matrix, like taking the pill and seeing every other game. Like,
For me, it really was War Machine, where I thought, I think early on, you know, I had always played Games Workshop games. It was always hard enough to find other people that were into the hobby.
Mm.
So the idea of starting a new game, the barrier for me was like, well, you know, how do I convince my friends to play something new?
Mm.
but then it was War Machine where I was like, oh, I can easily convince my friends to try this with me because it's so fun.
Mm.
And the models are so cool. And then once I had my eyes open to War Machine, then I realized like there's a whole world out there. It's funny,
I'm really looking forward.
No criticism. People should have their hobby be their hobby. They should be doing what they love. But I would love for people to check out my work or my colleagues at Blaster. Check out if you want to play giant robots or zombies or, you know, Call of Cthulhu style Frostgrave. Like, we've got a bunch of great stuff in there.
Yeah, and Gaslands, Mad Max, Necromunda, Ash Waste.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Yeah, there's so much.
Awesome. So. Yeah, really looking forward to the new Blaster, and
it's mind blowing. There's stuff in there that I just like. Yeah, I opened up the final draft on my iPad, and we all just we're blown away because all of us produce things that are just would be worth the cost of entry on their own. It's honestly, it's too good for its own good.
You will make your own like smaller magazines instead.
It's so cool. It's amazing. This volume, it really is a home run.
Yeah.
Or what's a good Swedish term for the ultimate?
Den ultimata.
Oh, thank you. All right.
Ultimata versionen av Laster.
Yeah, that's what's coming.
Yeah, great. Well, I will put a link to everything I need to put a link to in the description. And really, really great talking with you and hearing about the future.
Yeah, for sure. Hopefully the English format isn't too difficult for people to manage. I don't like ruin your analytics.
Yeah, people in Sweden usually knows English, and yeah, hopefully we'll reach further than Sweden.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. It was really fun to get a chance to hang out and talk hobby stuff.
Yeah, thank you. As I said, it's been like talking with Tolkien.
I'm honored.
But see you next time.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. We'll keep in touch.
Awesome. That's it for 106. Bye.